I was looking for it everywhere. And I'm like, this is a dead bug. Who runs backend JavaScript? You know, like, you know, right. Like those kind of things. A lot of the bugs we find are bugs that I like know that they exist, but I thought they were dead.
If you've been in the Bug Bounty Recon game for any period of time, you know how beautiful it is when some unsuspecting dev or DevOps guy spins up what's clearly supposed to be an internal facing server and accidentally just gives you the keys to the kingdom, right? It's a big payday. It's an easy win. It's a beautiful thing, right? And unfortunately for us, ThreatLocker also knows about that. And that's why they created their Zero Trust Network Access product, okay? Check this out. This is a product that prevents that unauthorized network access, not only at the network level, but also at the device level. Okay, so anybody's connecting to those sensitive internal services, you know that they are authorized as that user, but also the device that they're connecting from is validated. So you get complete introspection into who's accessing these sensitive systems. It's a great product. Check it out at ThreatLocker.com. All right, let's go back to the show.
Dude, what is up? It has not been that long. When was the episode we did with me and you and Justin?
It wasn't that long ago, but it was the best, so I wanted to come back on.
It was awesome. Yeah. Have you gotten any like feedback from it?
Yeah.
Reaching out?
People liked it. I hope people liked it. Yeah, people said they liked it, but maybe they would just say that to me.
Was that when we had demo pop in too?
Oh, yeah. I love the demo. We had to, it was like we rub a lamp and demo came out and taught us what
exactly.
Was
yeah, I need to ask Justin if he got any feedback on that. That was such a unique kind of funny and fun episode.
You should definitely do that more. Like rub the demo lamp.
Just call random guests to pop in the middle of episodes. I don't know if we'll have time for that today, but yeah. For anybody who doesn't know, obviously I'm Rezo Joseph, and then the guest, quote unquote guest, today is XSS Doctor, also known as JD. But yeah, so obviously you've been on before. It's not been that long, but we will, in the spirit of Justin, to make him happy, jump straight into a bug. And for the topic today, we're going to be talking about kind of what our hackbot has done. And I guess this is a little bit of an accountability to force us to put out the blog post that we've been working on for like a month. This episode should release with our blog post on like what mine and JD's hackbot has found this year so far. But anyways, yeah, dude, go and jump into one of the bugs that our hackbot found.
So basically, that we pointed the hackbot at a particular, what looked like a GraphQL API. What the hackbot found, this was mostly hackbot, this bug. The hackbot found that this was actually in the backend using MongoDB, and it parsed backend JavaScript. So you could use the where, like the $where expression, and you could basically run JavaScript. And you could like start by just saying like a $. So imagine these are MongoDB works with JSON. So basically you'd say like where would be the key, and then the value would be, let's say 1=1. And then you know, if that's said true, then you know that this is running backend JavaScript. And so with this, you could do this.constructor.constructor. And then you could basically do things like return global this.process equals process, and you can get the environmental variables. You could get the access token, like which was one of the environment. We basically got the environmental variables.
I will say,
like the access token.
You've left off the coolest part though, is that all of this was via like basically like a binary search. It didn't just like respond with the data.
Yeah. So it was blind. The hackbot completely got that. And then we had to reproduce it, obviously. So it was a critical, with a really good critical vulnerability.
Yeah. So for any listeners, the way that it worked was basically it looks almost like a GraphQL query, like you were saying, but then nested in the query was some query parameters, which were like JSON in nature. Yeah. Where the key was basically where, and then the, like you said, the value there was this dot constructor open parenthesis,
yeah,
single quote, return process env node env zero equals character. And actually, let's see if I can show this. There we go. So basically it looked like this.
Yeah.
Down in the body, you know, this would be considered like one body, and then this would consider one body. And so if this matched, then you could actually, you know, slowly binary search out this. And of course we had Claude, right, or Claude itself wrote a script to totally extract these variables, but this totally blew my mind. And it was really awesome to see our hackbot find something so cool like this.
Yeah. And even in the modern era of long triage, they triaged it in like 10 minutes.
That's true. Yeah. Which maybe it's because this program doesn't actually get that many, you know, reports, but who knows? I've actually been told by from a lot of people that the triage times have been better, which I don't know if that's because they're rolling out some of those like signal based queues where if you're a, you know, more of a seasoned hacker, you get faster triage times, or if the automation is just kicking in.
But the payment times are still very slow.
Very slow.
Very
slow. I was just talking to a young top hacker, Fav, and he was saying that, you know, he's had bugs sitting out there for a long time on Microsoft. And I had previously heard that Microsoft's been, you know, paying well. So
I love Fav. That guy's a great hacker.
He is. Okay. Yep. So, I can talk about another bug. I may have mentioned this one to Justin on the pod, but I couldn't remember. But there was a Google product. It was like one of their, you know, less high severity services, like one of their other services, but it was responding with an OTP like hash, like a bcrypt hash of a OTP in the response when you requested an OTP, and it was actually crackable. And you and I reported this. Our hackbot found it basically manually, and it was like, I don't know if it was like a specific type of bcrypt hash, but anyways, it said it would be crackable in like, you know, 2 hours on rentable viable hardware. So you could basically just, you know, reset someone's password and then crack the OTP and then take it over like that. So that was pretty sweet. But all right, we've got a bunch of sections in here, JD. You've like kind of broken this down in a cool, fun way. So this first section is integrating AI and manual hacking workflows.
So I guess what I was getting at there is, you know, when I used to only do manual hacking, and then in the last year or so, I'm basically hybrid. Like I do a lot of manual hacking and I do a lot of AI hacking, and I usually use AI in basically everything that I do, even manually. And I think that the way that I like to, you know, how I've transitioned to do that is, you know, first of all, I don't have much time in life to just hack straight, because I have another job and I have kids. And so like they're,
and yeah, they're literally a cardiologist with a family and kids.
Yeah. And so like, you know, when I used to start manually hacking, there was a lot of friction that I'd have to overcome. And I would often give up on programs because I'm looking at it like Google, like I'm looking at the protobuf. I'm like, I just don't have the emotional energy to do this right now. Right. Or like I would look at a program that looked like the threat model was very auth related. Like, you know, there were multiple privilege types of users, and you can create a million users, like the Archangel types of bugs that are great and pay really well. And like, really are great bugs. And if you want to actually hack on a program, you have to do that. But I couldn't do it. Like I just, my emotion, I'm like, why am I doing this? I should be with my kids right now. Like, why am I making technician and assistant and testing every single endpoint against both of them? But, you know, AI has really helped me do that. You know, so the first thing that it helps me do is the things that I can't do alone. And I'll set it to do that. Now, maybe it doesn't do as good a job as Archangel, of course. You know, it's still AI and not a top hacker, but it does a better job than I was doing at those bugs.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next thing is that when I first approach a target, I get very anxious. When I first look at it, like I look at the, I walk the site, I'm like, wow, there are just so many features here. Mm-hmm. There are so many, there's so much JavaScript, there's so many chunks to look at. And that, like, I don't understand the app. It takes you like days to understand an app or longer sometimes. And so I will use AI every time I hack to do like a once over on the app and to do OSINT on the app. Mm-hmm. And then to write me like a book on the app. And I'll like in my off time when I'm not, which I don't have much of, but like, let's say like if I have 30 minutes or whatever, if I'm waiting for something, then I'll read their assessment of the app. And then I still won't understand it, right? Because it's just me reading a book, but I will understand it much better than I would have originally just going into the app.
When you do that, I've got a question, because I feel like I often struggle with how to best consume that sort of stuff. Like, I think everyone listening probably is using AI to do stuff, and it'll often, you know, in Cloud Code, like all of the information or in Codex is kind of streaming by. And so I know a lot of people obviously use like other harnesses, or their, you know, their agents are like writing stuff to disk. Whenever you're saying like write you a book, like do you have it write markdown and then you just read it in VS Code? Like what are you typically doing?
Yes, that is exactly what I do. I write it, have it write markdown. I have, honestly, I have AI only. That's how I write, have it write everything in markdown, in .md files, in VS, and I read it in VS Code.
Do you,
and
the first, do you read it rendered or do you read it unrendered?
I read it unrendered. I should read it rendered. I'm just laziness that I don't like. Anyway,
I can never remember the keyboard shortcut. It's like Command Shift P or something.
I didn't even know there was a keyboard shortcut. I didn't even know
there is in VS Code. There's a single keyboard shortcut that'll like open up the rendered markdown.
Oh man, I'm gonna do that from now on. That's amazing. So
I can never remember.
So I read it, and I, even when I'm reading it, I'm not intaking it as very well. But then I'll go back to it multiple times during the engagement. And then especially it's helpful after I find all the bugs I think I can find. Like I'll find all these bugs. I'll put them in the folder. As I'm finding the bugs, I'll put the reports in a report folder in my like main folder. And then like there's also a folder called like initial or like recon. I name it random stuff. I should have a better naming system. And then at the end, when I'm like, I can't find any more bugs, I'm done finding bugs in this app, I'll ask the AI to look at the bugs, redo the book, and then I'll read the book. And at that time, the book means a lot to me. Mm-hmm. At this time, that time, I understand everything about the book. And I'm like, wow, like there's I forgot about that API. That's important. There's like a dev endpoint there. I didn't know about that, or a dev domain. I had no idea there was that. And then I go back and I always find more bugs after I do that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good idea. I feel like I just end up with like so many of those markdown files all over the place. Like, I feel like I need to come up with a better method for like, you know, telling the top kind of telling Codex or Cloud Code, like always do it like this.
My folder's a mess. The folder's a mess.
Messy.
And sometimes it won't save the thing in the special folder. It'll be on the base folder. I have a folder called bugs. On my desktop, and then like I have little folders within that, but like if you look in bugs, there's like random bug reports because it saves it in the wrong folder.
Even my home directory is just like so messy, which obviously know you can just have AI organize it later, which that's like a little pro tip. If no one's done that, it's really fun to have like Cloud Code organize your downloads folder into like something that makes sense, like it's by types and by other stuff.
But although I once had AI give me a message saying, lesson learned, put into my memory, do not RMRF before reading the folder. I'm like, well, what did you just do?
So what did you do?
Not yet.
So, I mean, basically, you know, the whole premise of getting you on here and us like kind of co-releasing this with the blog post was, and I think this would have been much more groundbreaking if we had like posted it in April or something. It feels like now literally everyone I know has like massive, awesome hackbots. Was basically just to tell the story of us kind of, getting into building the hackbot that we built, and then some like, you know, pros and cons. And, you know, some of this has been discussed on that last episode with me and Brandon and Justin. Did you listen to that one about like the...
Of course I did. Bro, I listen to every episode, every Thursday.
Yeah, I know.
Like, but I'm done.
The motivation one, I feel like, was pretty interesting.
I have a lot to say about that episode, actually, because I have, there are like I felt a lot of that, a lot of the ennui, you know, as a lot of that, like, not having passion as much passion for bugs you find with AI, which is true. But like right now I'm doing this thing that is like I have to do something with hardware for this thing I'm doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like revitalized my like passion for hacking. Like I wake up like excited to hack because it's a new thing, you know, and I'm learning it myself. And AI is certainly helping me learn it.
Oh, we skipped that section up above. Yeah, like just one amazing way to use AI is for just like learning new stuff, right?
Oh my God. I have to like with this hardware stuff, like I literally like, I'm like, I don't know how to do this. I've never done this before. And I'm like, Claude, how do I please like write me a study guide? And I'm following it.
One thing that I get in the weeds with whenever I'm using Claude Code is like reading all of the things it's doing between its replies. And then even when there is a reply, it feels like the stuff above that's messy. I wonder if I should experiment going back to using like the desktop app for some stuff, like obviously the code section of it. So it still has access to disk and all that stuff. But I wonder if it would just hide that noise that I feel like sometimes makes it feel a little overwhelming to be using, you know?
If I'm not in the terminal on my computer, I am sad.
Same. Like, yeah, that's true in general. But I'm just thinking like, as I was listening to what you were talking about, like, I was imagining myself like asking Claude, like, you know, describe to me this, build me like a little mini app to like teach me how to do something, right? Like some sort of like, let's say new front end vulnerability, like teach me about CSPT, right? And I feel like as it's talking to me, I'm like imagining myself looking at the terminal and then just try and then also like wanting to understand and like reading all the stuff above that. You know, all the stuff it just built and all the stuff it designed. And I feel like that makes it feel a little bit more intimidating.
Yeah, no, a lot of the time it prints a million things and I can't. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to. I'm just like, all right, do it.
Read the last few sentences. Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes it gets annoyed with me because it knows I didn't read what it said.
Mm-hmm.
As I said in the previous sentence.
When it starts off, I think it's a thing. It's like, as I just told you, you idiot.
But like the truth is like whatever AI does, like if you're good at the thing already, it's going to do better than it would have if you weren't good at the thing. Like if you and so getting good at things using AI will make your AI be better.
Yeah. So let's get into like basically the story. I think that's like kind of interesting to you. And also you've taken the time to write a huge part of the blog post about how we kind of got into building the hackbot in general. You know, I think that, you know, it can be boiled down to like, actually, did I reach out to you or did you reach out to me?
We were talking a lot.
Okay.
We were talking a lot randomly. Like, you know, we were co-hacking on different topics talking about AI a lot. And then you like came to me and you're like, listen, the hackbot thing is going to happen. Like the hackbot apocalypse is going to happen. Like you and I need to get involved. That's what you said. Basically, you're like, you and I need to do it. Like if we don't do it, like everyone's going to have a hackbot and we're not going to have a hackbot. And we do a lot of AI together. And so let's do it together. That's how you framed it.
Yeah. I think that's right. Yeah. We were basically sharing skills already. Like just, you know, improving our own skills.
And we were finding the same bugs. When we were hacking together, we were finding the same bugs. At the same time, we're like, let's just combine.
So that was back in like January, like really shortly after Opus came out. Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think there are plenty of people who have scaled their hackbots just as well as us or better. But JD and I have found like, what would you say, like 60 to 80 good bugs, like solid bugs, way more than we would have done in the past, you know, separately or even together. And I think we've had just more free time to spend on other things as well. Like, I don't think personally I've put in as many hours as I did last year, which part of that's just, I don't think I would have been able to based on like the family demands and trips and interruptions and all the things. But, and so that's been awesome. To be honest, I do think that like the benefits of it are also huge. Like, I don't think not only are we making more money and finding more bugs, but I think legitimately we are providing a much better service than I ever did before. Do you feel that way? Like when you do a pen test or when you do a,
oh yeah. I've started doing some pen tests here and there and I'm like, I find a lot of good stuff. Whereas I don't think I would have found that good stuff if it wasn't for AI, some amount of AI automation.
Right.
And then as far as Singularity goes, I wouldn't of like the 60 bugs we found, I probably would have found like six of them.
Right. In the time you put into.
Oh yeah.
The same thing.
Maybe less because, especially because a lot of the bugs it finds are not the bugs that I would ever look for.
Mm-hmm.
Like that one that we just spoke about. I told you, I used to look for that because I took the Portswigger Academy, NoSQL, whatever module. And then I was looking for it everywhere. And I'm like, this is a dead bug. Who runs backend JavaScript? You know, like, you know, right. Like those kind of things. A lot of the bugs we find are bugs that I like know that they exist, but I thought they were dead.
Mm-hmm.
Because I looked for them so often and I never even saw like a hint of them. They weren't even using that technology.
They exist on one in 10,000 hosts. Yes. And so it's like, it's not even worth checking for them, but obviously hackbots can check for it everywhere.
Yes. And that's like, I think that's such a takeaway from the hackbot. Like offload your stress to the hackbot.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's what I try to do. I try to offload my stress to the bot and then I do the things that I enjoy doing.
Yeah. This makes me just like think about how the places where we're most useful are the places where the hackbot and like all of these hacking agents struggle. And, you know, you could move it across the line. And then that makes me think like bringing good, we talk about leads all the time and gadgets all the time, but like if there were some way to build in or figure out how to make these coding agents or hacking agents get a good spidey sense and not for actually finding the bug, but then when to hand it off to the human, that'd be like really interesting. Like, could you imagine if like through the last 6 months, not only did it find and report bugs, but if, and like, it's always finding like leads and gadgets, but like, there's too many to really go through and like vet all of them. But wouldn't it be pretty cool if like over the course of the last 6 months, it had delivered like you personally, like 100 like JD specific leads for things that it thinks are vulnerable that you could get across the line. We should build that in.
The only problem is I watch the thought process constantly. I'm always watching the thought process and it has terrible spidey sense.
I know.
It has really bad spidey sense. It knows when a bug exists, but it's like, oh, that's dead. That doesn't work. And you're like, no, you were rate limited right there. You know, like the stuff like that, or the opposite happens too, where it goes after something that is obviously not vulnerable because it sees some weird header thing that I would have never, you know, but then again, sometimes the weird header thing pays off for it.
Right.
But I don't think it has a good spidey sense. Mm-hmm. But what is good is the gadget finding. And I also think there's like two different like universes of the hackbot, right? There's like what we did is a wide scope hackbot, you know, and like our wide scope, like we basically pointed it at everything and gave it our skills that we honed very well. But there's like the other kind of hackbot, like from the other a few weeks ago, the Google episode, which is the deep hackbot, right? Mm-hmm. Like one target, and you already know everything about the target, which seems to even work better because he did great on that.
Yeah, he did awesome.
But it's nice because I usually go deep and not wide, so it's nice having another thing that I have that goes wide.
Yeah, that's true. Me. Yeah, it makes me think we should build a hackbot. Making hackbot. We should build something that builds a whole bunch of the deep bots and then runs them.
No, like a whole system. Make a hackbot that makes one of those. We should make a hackbot that makes a hackbot that makes a hackbot.
Yeah, sure.
then we'll be even better.
There you go. So let's talk about these like negatives that you wrote here.
It can suck your interest away.
Yeah, I honestly think that the ennui that you were talking about, which by the way, if there's any non-native speakers, ennui is a very, actually, it's probably like a French word or something.
But. It is a French. It means restlessness resulting from boredom. That is the definition of ennui.
Wow, look at you, Mr. Wikipedia over here.
Yeah, that's what happens when you're 43 years old. You know stuff like that.
Yeah, I do think that there is something about a fake intelligence, finding bugs that you would struggle to find or that you would never find, that does impact the soul in some way. It does impact the motivation in some way. Obviously it's cool and it's great if you can get credit for it and make some money off of it. But it definitely, I think, kind of just like slowly wears on you. I do think your second point here that we're kind of back to being automators is pretty interesting. Actually, did you see Hackloop posted a blog like an hour ago? Did you see it yet? It's like exactly this topic that we're discussing. It's really interesting. Basically, it's the whole is Bug Bunny dead again conversation. But in it, the analogy that he uses is that it's kind of like watchmakers. So originally when watches were being made, they were like an artisanal craft and they were like very difficult to make. And it was like only high skilled people who could do it. And only the best watches actually kept time. So people always wanted the best, highest quality thing. And then there was something that came out that was basically called a quartz watch. And it's like, you know, quartz, I think it's quartz, like keeps time perfectly. And it allows you like mass produce really cheap watches. And there were some companies that killed, but then there were companies that adapted and started making quartz watches and they started thriving. And his whole point in all this, and his whole blog post is very long and all written by hand. So you should go read it. But it's just that the bug hunters that, you know, pivot into using AI effectively to find deeper, cooler bugs or more bugs at scale are going to thrive and other people won't.
I agree. I think I may agree with that. I don't know though, but we've done well. We've done better than I thought I could do.
Yeah.
You know,
so I think this discussion comes down to, do you believe that this state that we're in now will continue? If so, then of course, bug bounty's not over and it's going to keep being in this golden era and thriving.
Or well, do sort you of think- a different. Yeah, sort of a different card. Is bug bounty dead? I don't even know if I want to get toe into that.
My point is just that, like, you're right. Like, right now it's awesome. And the bifurcation is just, does it get worse as all the bugs are found? Or do we just keep going and there's tons more bugs and we keep finding stuff? Who knows?
I think it's just like anything, it's how you use it. Like, right now I'm doing this engagement and I'm doing a lot of manual hacking and I'm using a lot of AI and it is just going great.
Yeah.
And like much better than I would have done with the same skills without the AI.
Yeah.
For this reason, because you have to like understand what it is and I think you have to not stop doing what you do. Like, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, you know, you can't be like, okay, I'll just let AI do everything. Like it, and I'm liking that a lot, too.
Mm-hmm.
But the ennui is real and like when we found that bug that we talked about at the beginning, that was great. And I know we're going to get paid really well for it, but like finding like a medium by myself even feels better than that bug popping.
Yeah. And he does talk about that in the blog post, Hack Luke does, just to not to overemphasize that blog post, but he mentions the fact that like a critical, like 5 years ago, you would be like really proud of it and it'd be like pretty rare. And now it's like, wow, there's just like so many highs and criticals being found all the time, by yourself and by our hacking agents, that it does feel like less good.
That's true. But on the flip side to that, if you like, sometimes when I find something like that, not that particular one, but it's like some bugs that I really had no idea that this type of bug existed.
Yeah.
I'll replicate it like to learn it.
That's true.
And I would have not. And like another thing that's interesting that I've found from the Hackbot is like, I spent all of last year learning client side.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's like what I learned. And I always said to people, like, I don't even understand what being good at server side means. Cause like client side is like kind of a skill that you can learn. You understand the window references and stuff. But like server side, like when people say good at server side, what does that even mean? Mm-hmm. But now I'm like seeing all of the bugs that are out there on the internet.
Yeah.
Like these bugs are coming in and I'm like, oh wow. Like that exists here and probably elsewhere.
Yeah.
So like I'm kind of getting better at server side mm-hmm. watching these bugs come in and reproducing them and understanding them. So that's something.
I feel like server side is just all like regular expression bypasses.
No, I think server side is like knowing mm-hmm. what could be a bug on the server side and then looking for it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, that, you know what I mean? And like, I feel like I didn't like when you do stuff like the training, when you do like bug bounty training and classes and port swigger, and then you go back on into reality and you don't find any of those bugs. It's very demoralizing. And you're like, I just learned all that for nothing. Like what is happening? I'm not finding anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and that's how I felt at least. And then I sort of got into client side and I started finding stuff and I understood that. But like I like veered away from server side because I'm like, that stuff doesn't exist. I'm in my head. That's what I'm thinking.
Right.
You know, but now I'm like sort of seeing what actually exists, so I can look for it. And I'm finding more server-side stuff myself as a result of this.
Yeah, in my head, like I never thought about this. It's almost like if you imagine like a huge X and Y table where there's a whole bunch of cells, like, you know, let's say it's a 10 by 10, there's like 100 cells. Like learning hacking techniques, both server-side and client-side, is like you're kind of like filling in all those cells. Like those are like the things that you like learning. And then like, let's say that you have like full coverage. Let's say you know all the bugs. And so they're all green. Then like when you come to a new target, you have to like check for all those bugs across all of the scope. And then so you can imagine it was like another, you know, 10 by 10 grid. And then if you think about like the bugs that actually exist, it's like a third 10 by 10 grid that's like all green, but there's like a few red dots. There's like a few red cells. And those are the actual bugs.
Yeah.
And you basically have to kind of like check every box to overlay it to really figure out where the bugs are.
And you have to understand like what kind of bugs would exist on a particular type of target. And that's what you look for. Like that, I guess that's what being good at server side is. Anyway, this is really deviating. But that's I thought about this a lot because I want to be good at everything. I want to be a good all-around hacker.
Well, dude, I think that the push into hardware stuff is really cool and really high value. And I think will pay huge dividends long-term.
I love learning a new skill. Like when I was learning JavaScript, that was like the best. Like I like loved that. So I was just walking around in a good mood all the time. And I'm kind of like that right now when I'm like about to learn something new.
Yeah.
And AI, I couldn't be doing it without AI. And we'll see how it works out.
Yeah. All right, dude. Let's hit up these last couple sections, which is how we did it.
Do you want to talk about the thing? Let's talk about the thing.
Sure. I don't care. Yeah. So, and also you mentioned Singularity earlier and we never really defined it. Our hackbot is called Singularity. And that's after the idea that I had that one day there would be like a,
You did that. You named it that. That was a good name.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I just thought that, you know, and I mentioned this in my TEDx talk that I did like 2.5 years ago or whatever, that there'd be a point that's almost like the singularity. But it would be called, you know, the bug bounty singularity, where there would be a point at which token cost was cheaper than the output of the findings that it would come up with. And then at that point, everyone would just scale up. And I think everyone is kind of doing that. I think what prevents people from just spinning up 100 Claude Code instances is that, like, you still have to do manual validation on a lot of them. And so you do end up at a scale where, like, you literally can't. And you have to, like, keep auth alive. We'll talk about this in a minute. But you have to, like, you have to keep the servers alive and you have to keep the auth alive and you have to like keep improving your system. And so all those things have like a manual labor tax.
So there's like multiple parts, right? So there's like the actual thing hacking the program. There is the thing which tells the AI to hack the program and which program to hack and how it hacks. And then there's us interacting with it somehow. Right. Like that's how we thought about it. Right. Like in the beginning, we're like, how do we do it? Like this thing has to hack. We have to somehow make that thing hack. And then we have to somehow interact with both the output of the thing and hopefully even into the thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. Yeah, and then you came up with the idea of a Discord for the for both.
Yeah. I mean, people were actually, I think this is before OpenClaw, but you know, I just wanted to be able to control it from like the stuff I was doing. So before we even had the hackbot, I was like interacting with my Claude Code instances for just like development purposes and hacking purposes via Discord. And so, yeah, we set it up as like a custom Discord for the two of us. And it was Justin originally, but Justin really never had time to hop in. But
Justin's like, I'm not doing that.
So that's how we interacted with it. And like you said, you know, that second mode, obviously there's the hacker, but then there's all, which some people call workers or whatever, but then there's also like the boss, which is like in charge of like kicking those off, delegating things, telling it to go back and hack harder. And you know, you can like include or exclude different types of things. Like, does your boss also choose scope or does that come automatically? Does your boss also figure out auth? Does it also take notes, you know, like, or does your worker take notes or do you have an overseer that then takes notes, you know? And then there's like a lot of different systems for how you're going to log all of the output and how do you pick back up from a strand if you really need to or want to.
I think like each of these three parts caused trouble for us. A lot of points in the last, how long have we been doing this now? Six months.
Yeah,
6 months. And like, for example, like the let's say the first step is getting the thing to hack the target. There are multiple ways we could do that, right? We could do that on computers. We could do that in the cloud. We could do it one at a time. We could do it 10 at a time. And when do you run out of tokens? How many do you spin up to run out of tokens? When do you scale up the mm-hmm. operation? These are all like hard questions that we had mm-hmm. to answer. I guess this episode is for people who want to do this. All of these are very hard questions, and it's all trial and error.
Yeah.
And then as far as the interacting with it, like it sending information back to us, we went through multiple iterations of that. Mm-hmm. We went through a dashboard phase. We went through the Discord bot, which we're still on. We thought about a million things, like how to interact with our phone, how to get our computers in.
I think Findings still outputs as like PDF in the Findings channel, but then we have like Markdown in the Reports channel.
Yeah, and we do. And we have we have a lot of ways to interact with it, but like thinking about it, these things are going to pull back to us like multiple true and false positives all the mm-hmm. time. Like there's like every day, how many alerts do we get from it?
Yeah, too
like
many.
50 alerts, right? Yeah. And like I look through them a lot, you know, constantly, and so do you. And we try to find the ones, and then I get like a little @XSSDoctor !! If they're good too.
From right.
Yep. But sometimes there's stuff that is like kind of lost in that mix mm-hmm. that may be a good gadget for another day. And we have to we've gone through iterations of that too. Like parse that. And then there's the, how do we interact with it? Part of the story, which, mm-hmm. Like at first we couldn't interact with it. And then we made little logs that we could click on and type to it to inject into the bot, which I think was a very good idea also of yours.
We don't really use it anymore, but yeah.
I use it. I use it like crazy. Yeah, of course. I use it like crazy. Yeah. And I change stuff based on it. That was our big, that was like a big change when we were getting all this crazy. So at one point we were getting not that many findings, but the tokens were being used up constantly, like within 2 days. And so Rezo's like, dude, we got to see what's happening. Like, what is happening? And he like ran all these metrics. It turns out like 80% of the time it was using 80% of tokens on auth, not authorization. So I was trying to log in over and over to the application, like multiple ways for 80% of its tokens. And then it was only hacking for 20% of its tokens.
That's right.
And we found that out looking at that. And then we would like look at the log output and it'd be like,
yeah,
let's try to solve this CAPTCHA 100 million times.
Right.
And so that's something you have to kind of deal with here.
Yeah, I'm surprised that you still go in and like inject into the live running log sometimes.
When I have nothing to do, that's what I do.
That's awesome. Yeah. When we abstracted it out, basically we used to have like a thread per every instance of every worker. Yeah. But now it's like the boss. And so you don't actually see like the actual, it's like the good thing we could actually change back or try to add back.
Talk about that then. That's something else we did that was interesting.
Yeah. I mean, just in general, we used to have like these hard coded phases where it would go from like, you know, recon to then hacking to then like looking everything over and trying to chain together bugs. But you know, I feel like you get a lot higher accuracy, a lot better output if the like hacker worker or the hunter worker is told like, oh no, you missed stuff. Go back and work harder, or go back. And some people, I think Justin and maybe Jay or and Douglas DJ both, have that hard coded where it just says like, you're doing great, keep going, or no, try harder. Whereas we have an actual like kind of like boss, you know, or overseer that's no, it's like, oh no, you missed this and this, can go back and do that. And it's hard to know if that's increased accuracy. Like I feel like our bug throughput has stayed the same. Definitely
increased accuracy.
Oh, did it?
Definitely increased accuracy. Yeah, dude, that idea that again you came up with, you're the idea guy. I'll tell you that all these ideas are yours. Like you're like, let's put an LLM in between us and the worker of some sort, and that our findings like tripled after that.
Really, I feel like they've mostly stayed constant, but I do think they were like kind of like what's it called? Like they were like stalling out on us, and then we did that.
They were
like
stalling picked back out. Up. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were stalling it. But that like LLM in the middle was such a good idea.
I appreciate that. Yeah, we got to all of this is like, I feel like I've been in a little bit more of like a Debbie Downer headspace after coming back from the most recent vacation. And I don't know why. So anyways, but I feel like it's affecting my view on that. But yeah, so obviously we just like everyone, we have a lot of false positives. I actually think that, you know, that's something that has been discussed a lot on the pod over the last 6 months, but is still something that is a huge factor at play for why this hasn't scaled even bigger. Because obviously like people have to like vet their own false positives, and you can kind of bake it in a little bit. Like you can, you know, of course, bake in like, you know, ignore course issues, or most of the time course issues aren't this or whatever. But I do think that like there can't be like full takeoff on everyone just running a million hack bots and just auto submitting things. And I think there are probably very few people who are like scripting the submission of bugs. One, because it's nice to read the report, but two, because there are still going to be like some false positives in nearly any system.
100%. In the beginning of this, I like trusted it too much, and I had some bad situations. But now what I do is, first of all, I always now personally like make the thing, do run the POC. Mm-hmm. I have it right. Every time I get something, I have it make me a POC, and I make the POC proxy through Kaito. Mm-hmm. I like every single time. And then I'll run the POC. I'll look at each request in Kaito, and then I'll very clearly look at the scope, because it loves to go out of scope.
Yeah.
And not necessarily out of scope, but not in scope, you know, right. it won't particularly go to out of scope. If it's put it out of scope, but it does not care so much about that in scope part. Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's reference from in scope, which, you know, as bug hunters, we often report those too. But if it's like a reference or an API call from an in scope asset, it'll like happily go there. Yeah.
But like a lot of the time, the reason why the bug exists is because it's in one of these programs that they only care about the in-scope scope, and it's mm-hmm. not in the in-scope scope. And yep. and then that's why it exists, because no, you know.
Yeah, no one's looking at it. Bug hunters haven't looked at it.
Yeah. Yeah, so and I don't really care about false positives so much anymore. I care about, at least if they're, because false positives tell you something a lot of the time, mm-hmm. like, you know, if you look closely, but as long as there's like at least 20% true positives, mm-hmm. I'm fine with that. Yeah. I can look through some false positive reports.
Yeah, of course. I mean, honestly, it is like one of those things where it's like, running it is just like also fun, because like we're just like eat and breathe bugs. It's just like fun to see like potential bugs. Like I just like looking through the output, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I love looking through the output. We've had a lot of, there've been a lot of, I think the hardest part for us was auth, and it's still the hardest part.
Yeah. And to be clear to everyone, cause anytime we say auth, I also have this like moment of like, wait, there are like kind of two forms of auth. Like one is your agent auth. Like how are you authenticating to Claude or Codex, right? And we've talked about that a long time ago. But, and then there's also like auth to the programs. And the second one is really, you know, still the holy grail. And when you can solve that really well, you can find way more bugs.
The hardest part is that, like if we think this is a terminal application, and if you use headless terminals, that limits you in terms of the way that interacts with websites. Like a lot of the big websites use like CAPTCHA, obviously, and it's very hard to beat a CAPTCHA in Playwright, no matter what. And there's like people who sell you things that say it can do it. But like, if you think about it, like look at a program like Amazon. Like Amazon, they're not making that CAPTCHA to prevent hackers from getting in. They're making the CAPTCHA to prevent people from scraping the site, right, and stealing Amazon. And like, they have an entire like building. I don't know if they do, but they have like a lot of people in Amazon whose purpose it is to prevent you mm-hmm. from scraping that website. Yeah. And if you want to get an AI to log into Amazon and do anything, it's extremely really difficult. Yeah, headless. Yeah. So you have to do it with headed, which is possible, but then you need an actual computer with a screen, which is fine, but that gets expensive. And like, we're going to use it, you know, you're just going to have a computer sitting there that also has problems. We had that too, but then it kept restarting. It kept updating. Like stuff like that would happen. And then
yeah, we still haven't solved a lot of this, guys. Like we're not some like super experts who have solved all this.
And then you have other programs that like auth reset, like it refreshes the auth token every 15 minutes. And if you log in anywhere else, that refresh cancels out, invalidates the refresh on the thing.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you'll have solved it. And then like 3 days later, because if you're continually refreshing the token every like 10 minutes, but then something changes on the server side or something happens and you lose auth and you look back at this thing that you made to keep auth and you're just like, oh, hasn't worked in like 3 weeks. Like no wonder we haven't found a bug on this program in 3 weeks. That's why he did so well. Broodcat did so well. That's not why, but I mean, he did so well for a lot of reasons. That's one of the reasons it seemed like he did so well on Google, because he took that out of the equation.
He did. He did. He just like solved auth rate was always there, which was genius. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the whole world is looking for unauthenticated, like there are people that are automators who like are even better without AI than we are with AI at finding unauthenticated bugs. But like that authenticated realm is where the bugs live.
Yep. All right, we've got just like a couple minutes left here. I love that you have the successes section. I feel like it's honestly where so much value lives for listeners. And so we'll kind of run through this, even though this is a little bit of the secret sauce. One is the validator. And actually, I'll go ahead and mention also the escalation agent.
By the way, also both your ideas. I'm just popping that in there.
I appreciate it.
In case someone thought it was my idea.
Yeah. So we implemented an escalation agent that like when a finding comes in, before it goes to the validator, which validates the bug and writes the report, it attempts to escalate it. And so we actually have seen a lot of success out of that. It's really cool. We have these like escalation logs and it'll be like, oh, I escalated this low to a medium or this medium to a high or this medium to a critical. Then the validator is kind of similar to that in the sense that it's looking at a finding. Sometimes it's already been escalated. And then it's basically told, hey, you need to replicate this in like a kind of skeptical way, as if you were a triager for the program. And, you know, if it totally checks out and validates, then you have to write the report. And then it gets all of the report writing skill and all of that. And so I think that those two have been absolutely huge. And I think everyone kind of needs those in their hackbot. Did you want to say anything about those before I went down the list?
No, but I want to say adding more LLMs into the chain is better. It for some reason, it ends up being better than when you'd think it would be fewer LLMs and more people. But I think if you add more LLMs, they don't filter out. They hone the thing. Mm-hmm. You know, like the validator, it's very, I look at the unvalidated bugs, by the way. I look at them. And it's very rare that they're wrong, it's wrong. You know, it's just like it. And I think the idea is like, it gets excited, you know, it wants to find us a bug. And then it's like, I found a bug. And then validator, it wants to invalidate. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah.
Anyway, that's.
Yeah, you're fine. I don't want to keep you too long because I know we're kind of at time here. One of the other cool successes is Hail Mary mode, which is basically where we just throw everything at the wall and say, hey, this, I don't care if you can't find a bug in this, then you need to find it in the libraries and in the dependencies. And if you can't find a bug in that, then I want you to find it in the protocol itself. It's just like, you basically just tell it to go balls to the wall until it finds something. And that's found a couple things. It hasn't been the best. I still think there's a lot of meat on the bone there. We haven't been running it that much. Yeah. There's a lot of meat on the bone.
Every time we run it, it finds something. Every time we run it, it finds something. And we've submitted those things. We just don't run it enough.
Yeah, we need to run it
more. And the best part of it is that the worker guys tell the orchestrator, the Hail Mary orchestrator, like the orchestrator's like, hey, go out and fuzz this thing, you know, and like find everything you can and think about the fuzzing and do weird mutations on the fuzzing. And we have a whole agent who does that and then gives back the fuzzing list. And then the guy, he thinks about the fuzzing list, my orchestrator friend. And then he's like, oh, we need someone to go after this endpoint. And he makes the whole work. I love that guy.
Yeah.
Me and Hail Mary mode are like best friends.
That's so funny. I feel like I haven't read enough of the chain of thought of the Hail Mary mode.
I'm like all about reading chain of thought. I love reading chain of thought.
Cool, dude. All right. Well, since we're a few minutes over, I will go ahead and call it here. I do want to either on the podcast or at least in the Critical Thinkers chat, kind of debate this whole discussion around hackbots and like the models being blocked off. Like, you know, we lost access to Fable, which it was while I was on vacation, so I didn't even get a chance to use it. I feel like I like had to improve some skills and that was it. And I really want to use it to improve our whole system. But
I'm going to tell you something. I have one little say on that is that I can be completely off on this matter, but I think that there is going to become a point where it is a better hacker than I am at everything. You know, that's, and I'm dreading that point because then that means that there's no purpose for me anymore. So like, when Mythos and Fable like weren't allowed, I don't know if it's better than me. I wasn't like, heck yes, because I do also want to play with it. I also am somebody who likes to play with it, but like maybe as I like hacking a lot. I don't want it. Anyway, that was my little, I wasn't upset. I wasn't that upset about it. Because Opus, me and Opus are still better at a lot of things together than Opus is alone. Mm-hmm. And maybe that won't happen later and then I'll be a sad.
Yeah. No, I think that'll last a long time, though. At the very least, people to orchestrate stuff, to build hackbots, stuff like this. And, you know, you've already built up 6 months of that skill set, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right, dude. Thanks for hopping on here. Have a good day.
Anytime.
Peace, dude.
You know, I love it.
And that's a wrap on this episode of Critical Thinking. Thanks so much for watching to the end, y'all. If you want more Critical Thinking content, or if you want to support the show, head over to ctbb.show/discord. You can hop in the community. There's lots of great high-level hacking discussion happening there, on top of masterclasses, hackalongs, exclusive content, and a full-time hunter's guild if you're a full-time hunter. It's a great time. Trust me. All right, I'll see you there.